Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. It is also the last Arsecast of this season. Can you believe it? Despite all the ups and downs, well, there weren't that many ups, in fairness, lots of downs, quite a few sidewayses, a number of backwards, and lots of diagonals, which didn't quite get where they were supposed to be going. But it's done. It's over. We play our final game on Sunday against Brighton and Hove Albion. There are still some things to be decided. I think that's the right way to put it, because if you say there is still something to play for, it sounds like a thing that you might want. And to those of you listening to this who actively want the Europa Conference League, fair play. I'm not here to stand in judgment, to each their own, etc., etc. It's just not for me. I don't really see the benefit of it. But of course, there are other things that could happen on the final day. We could not qualify for the Europa Conference League and still finish above Spurs, which would be something, I guess. I mean, you take it, you take your wins where you can get them, but really, does it do anything to make up for what this season has been or not been, as the case might be? I'm not sure it really does, but it would still be a bit funny, I guess. So let's see what happens. The teams involved in this final day hoo-ha, if you want to call it that. I guess you'd call it that if you're Al Pacino, wouldn't you? The final day hoo-ha are Arsenal, obviously, Everton, Tottenham, and West Ham United, who currently sit in sixth. So a point for West Ham would make sure that they've got Europa League football. Tottenham and Everton, well, no, Everton can't finish because goal difference is terrible. Tottenham could finish sixth and get Europa League football. So we don't want that. So we want West Ham to get a point and then maybe Everton to qualify for the Europa Conference League thing, and Tottenham, for us to finish just above Tottenham, and we don't have the distraction of that tournament next season. Of course, there's some stuff still to sort out in terms of the top four: Leicester, Liverpool, and Chelsea, all chasing down the Champions League places. And of course, Arsenal are in the post-Christmas Champions League next season, which is going to be really exciting for us as well. No, look, we have been better since Christmas, but before Christmas was just, it was bad. It was bad, and those points that we dropped in that period and some of the points that we've dropped since have had a really significant impact on this season. We finished better than we started, but the first half of the season has us where we are. And when you look at where we are now, 58 points, and it's 66 points that Liverpool are in. They're in fourth. Man, we should, despite all our problems, have been in the reckoning for top four, the way this season has gone and the points totals. You know, it wouldn't be ridiculous to say that we could have relatively easily garnered another 6 or 8 or maybe 10 points from some of the results that we've had so far this season. So if you're so inclined, you could look at that in a positive way and say, well, you can see a pathway for improvement next season. If you're not so inclined to be positive, you would say dropping all those points was, you know, pretty shit and a poor reflection of how the team has performed and been managed this season. But there we are. So look, a little bit later on, we will be talking Joe Willock, who became the youngest player ever to score in 6 consecutive Premier League games. 6 in a row for Newcastle. He's had a really big impact since he's gone on loan there. Whether it's good for him, good for us, if we want to keep him, sell him, well, it'll all come out during the summer, won't it? It will be definitely interesting if someone tests our mettle, Newcastle or otherwise, with a bid for Joe that might make us go, Okay. But we will get a Newcastle perspective a little bit later on in the show. First, though, to talk about the 3-1 win over Crystal Palace on Wednesday night and much more besides. From Football London, delighted to welcome back to the Arsecast, Chris Wheatley. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Andrew.
Let's start with the 3-1 win over Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park on Wednesday night. A game that I think was made a little bit more interesting by the fact that fans were back in the stadium. And as I said in the blog, I don't think you can have a real football season without an Arsenal player being booted up in the air and then the opposition fans singing "Same old Arsenal, always cheating." So it was lovely to get that between before the end of the season, I should say. Where do you stand on the win itself in terms of it looked quite likely that it was going to end 1-1 and more points dropped for Arsenal, but two injury time goals made it a 3-1 win, a gloss to the scoreline that perhaps wasn't merited, but you'll take it, of course. But where do you stand on the concerns about, let's say, the overall performance in the second half, where Arsenal didn't really create an awful lot versus, I guess you would say, the character to keep going and to get those late goals?
Yeah, I think the creativity's been a problem all season. I know it kind of improved when Emile Smith Rowe was introduced in December, but I still feel that Arsenal have not kind of solved those issues. I think the injury to Martin Odegaard certainly didn't help, but it was good to see him kind of firing yesterday. It was a great assist, wasn't it, for Gabriel Martinelli. I think Arsenal played well in the second half. They showed those kind of characteristics that you'd want from an Arsenal team, especially to kind of get the 3 points in the end. But for me, it was more about those attacking players and the fact that Martinelli came on. There's been such a clamour for him to start, hasn't there? And I think I was really happy to see him kind of come on and make a difference. But Nicola Pepe as well, like, despite a lot of criticism from certain corners saying that he hasn't been consistent enough, you look at 9 goal involvements in 17 starts. I think it's not too bad, is it? Since, I think, December, January time. He's been doing well, Pepe. And I think it was a good win. My personal view on the Conference League, I'm sure we're going to get to that, is that it's not a great competition for Arsenal to qualify for. But clearly the players feel differently and they want to win these last two games to make sure Arsenal finish as high as possible.
All right. Well, I mean, I think last night there was still the outside possibility that we could have finished in sixth if things had gone differently between West Brom and West Ham. But ultimately, West Ham won there, and that means we cannot finish sixth. We can only finish the highest I think we can finish is seventh. And we'll come to the Conference League stuff. You mentioned Nicolas Pepe. He is a confusing player is maybe not the right way to put it, but I, you know, before this game, I would have thought, when I thought about what was happening this summer, that we've got bigger problems to solve than him, and he's of the right age where he can still take a step forward and develop. But I felt like there were question marks or a question mark over him because of the way that he's been used this season, because I don't think, you know, based on everything we've seen during Mikel Arteta's time in charge, he doesn't appear to me, to be fully convinced by Nicolas Pepe. And I think that was in some ways evident in yesterday's performance. Two really good goals. His timing to get on the end of that Tierney cross to put it away with his right foot, fantastic. The goal that he scored in injury time, Freddie Ljungberg was talking on BT Sport afterwards, and he said, "That's what I saw from him in training every day. If you put him in those positions, he can be lethal." The difficulty is what kind of comes around those things. I mean, do we just have to accept that he is a player who will have these flashes of really excellent stuff and flashes of quality and these goal contributions, while perhaps the rest of his game isn't as polished, let's say, as you might like, or as the manager might even like?
I don't think Arsenal should accept that, really. You know, and I think the transfer fee will always follow Nicola Pepe around because it's such a huge burden on his shoulders and Arsenal's shoulders as well. I think with Pepe, you kind of just hit the nail on the head. He flits in and out of games, doesn't he? And I feel like that is not ideal for a winger who really Arsenal need to be on form every single week, every single match he needs to be performing, because the position he plays in is so important. I do like Pepe. I like his attitude. Judging from what Mikel Arteta said post-match, he mentioned that Nicola Pepe has been taking part in the kind of post-match reviews. Like, he's really interested in his performances and knowing where he can improve on. And I feel like that is maybe a difference from last season. We know that he was quite shy of confidence. And I think he's definitely improved in terms of confidence over the past few months. And that is just a natural thing that happens when you get more game time as well. Because, you know, he wasn't playing as many games as he would have liked earlier on in the season and last season. But I agree. I feel like Mikel Arteta is not going to kind of let it slide if Pepe doesn't produce consistently over the next season or so. I feel like, you know, that price tag is hanging over him. It's been talked about a lot, hasn't it? But I'm not sure how much longer Pepe will have at Arsenal after next season if he doesn't produce consistently.
It is. It's an interesting one. I think he's a really interesting player in this current team and in this setup. And when you think about what this, what the manager is doing, like, we don't create, as a team, Arsenal don't create enough. I think everybody would accept that. I'm sure that's an issue for Mikel Arteta and his coaching staff to think about. So you become a little bit more reliant than you would like to be on players who can produce moments of individual quality and individual brilliance. He is one of those. So it's this kind of weird thing where you're looking for the team to move in a different direction, to become more rounded, to be able to put pressure on opponents. I think that's one of the problems that we have, is a lot of possession, but not enough pressure on teams. They don't feel necessarily as under pressure as they should, given how much we have of the ball. And last night, we needed some moments of individual brilliance rather than the kind of the weight of that pressure telling. And Pepe is somebody who fits into that category really well.
Again, he just flits in and out of games for me, and it's frustrating. I do find watching him frustrating. I'm sure many fans would agree with that, because it feels like he turns it on and off in games. You know, his performances really do fluctuate. There have been matches this season where he has really struggled. But the thing I do like about him is that he's a risk taker. Mm. And I think Arsenal need those kind of players in the team. I think Gabriel Martinelli is another example of a player who is willing to take risks in the final third to push the team forward. And Arsenal don't have too many of those players. So I guess when you're kind of considering and assessing Pepe's performances, you've got to take that into account, that some people may use the fact that he loses the ball or loses possession quite a lot in games, but that's because he takes risks. And maybe those risks won't always pay off. But in the long run, Arsenal do have a quality player on their hands. And I feel like he definitely has a lot more to deliver. And, you know, his stats in the Europa League, you know, he's arguably the best player in the Europa League this season. So I do feel like he has improved a lot. There's definitely more to come from him. But yeah, I think the pressure is going to be on next season for him to kind of up his game and up the goals and assists.
Yeah, Martinelli is another one, obviously, who people have wanted to see a great deal more of this season than we have. And again, Mikel Arteta talked about how close he is and how he's pushing and fighting to be closer and closer to the team. And he talked a little bit about how, you know, we have to understand where the boys are in this phase of their development, what they've done already this season and last season. He said, I know we want to play with 11 academy players under 20, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I don't know that everybody wants that, but I think what they are keen to see is when some of the senior players don't produce and don't quite do what they're doing, that you give some of those minutes and those opportunities to a younger player like Martinelli. I thought his post-game interview was quite... I mean, look, he's still learning English and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, he wasn't giving much away when he was asked about, were you disappointed not to be involved? He just said, I'm here, I'm ready whenever Mikel needs me. You know, played it very, very nicely, very straight bat. But how do you view the way Martinelli has been used this season? Do you feel like in some ways he's being held back a little bit deliberately? Can you think of other reasons why perhaps Mikel Arteta has been so reluctant to use him, even from a substitute's point of view? And I accept that, like, over the last few weeks, he certainly has been more involved. I mean, what do you think of the way this season has gone for Martinelli? Is it one of those that could inspire him, motivate him to do more next season? Or is it one of those that he might think, well, what's going on here? Is this the right place for me?
Yeah, well, you mentioned it with his post-match interview, Martinelli. The media training's clearly been paying off, hasn't it? And his English has improved a lot, to be fair, over the past few months. But in terms of his kind of lack of game time, it's a strange one. I didn't really get what Mikel Arteta was talking about last night in terms of the academy players and playing 11 academy players. I think Arsenal's kind of blend of youth and experience has been one of their strengths over the years. And clearly Arteta is getting really frustrated and annoyed with questions about Martinelli, because he gets asked about Martinelli in almost every press conference at the moment, especially when he doesn't start games. And, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is there's a huge clamour, as I said earlier, for the fans to want to see him play, because he's one of the most exciting players on the pitch. Why is he not playing? It's a strange one. The way Arteta talks about Martinelli is almost as if he's a kind of arrogant 17-year-old teenager, you know, who's got like a Lamborghini. It just needs to be more grounded. But Martinelli is the complete opposite of that. He, you know, from what I've heard on the training ground, he's a humble guy. He's really respectful to all of the Arsenal staff, hardworking, as we can see on the pitch, and he always gives everything. So doesn't make too much sense as to why he doesn't get as many minutes as he could have, or he should have. And I feel like in every opportunity, or almost every opportunity he's been given, he's taken advantage of it. It's a difficult one to try and explain why, but maybe it's a kind of just power thing in terms of Arteta wants to kind of bed him in into the team, doesn't want to give him loads of opportunities at once, wants to make him fight for his place in the team. But at the same time, you have to question someone like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang maybe not delivering as much as people would have liked this season. Certainly didn't do that well yesterday. I thought he was one of the players who really struggled, and he looked quite frustrated. He cut a kind of frustrated figure up front a couple of times when I think Kieran Tierney attempted a pass to him and he threw his hands up in the air. So clearly Aubameyang has had a frustrating and difficult season. But I feel like Martinelli is, again, he's another one of these players who is close. He's on the edge of the first team or starting games regularly. And I really do hope he gets more opportunities next season.
If you're Aubameyang, let's say, put yourself in those fancy shoes and those shiny cars for a moment. And look, there are external issues that I think we have to acknowledge in terms of how his season has gone on the pitch and off the pitch and with his health. He must be feeling more or less back to his or something close to normal anyway for him to be starting and playing 90 minutes anyway. How would you deal with leading the line in a team which doesn't really give you the ball in the positions that you need it to be in? Do you see both sides of this issue where you can absolutely say Aubameyang has been disappointing and he has struggled at times this season, but the only opportunity we had in that second half was a kind of half chance that Aubameyang got at the back post. Maybe he could have headed it, maybe he could have dealt with it a little bit better from a Callum Chambers cross, which came in the 83rd minute. There is, I think, some mitigation for how poor his season has been, which is tied in with the lack of creativity that this team has suffered from throughout the season. So I think you could say maybe we could do with a different centre-forward. Maybe we could do with a different kind of centre-forward. But at the same time, if the team isn't making chances for the centre-forward, what are they supposed to do unless they're a Thierry Henry type who will just take the ball and make something happen? And as we know, and as we've seen, and surely we all understand from Aubameyang throughout his career, that's not who he is. So if you're playing him at centre-forward, do you not have to try and play around that side of things?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. To be fair, when I've spoken to people close to Aubameyang, they've basically echoed what you've just said, and I feel that that's probably one of Aubameyang's frustrations over the past couple of seasons, that he's kind of been isolated. I know he was the kind of main man towards the end of last season on that FA Cup run, But even then, he wasn't playing as a kind of central striker, was he? He was on the left most of the time. And for me, I think Alexander Lacazette has had kind of suits that system more than Aubameyang, because he's the kind of player who can drop deep. We've seen him play in the kind of number 10 role. We've seen him play centrally, and we know that he prefers to play centrally. And I feel that that's one reason why Lacazette maybe could stay for at least another season or up until the end of his contract. Like, I don't think you can rule anything out with that one. But yeah, I think there are kind of reasons why Aubameyang has struggled this season, and certainly no slight on him, especially after he single-handedly won Arsenal the FA Cup last season. So certainly doesn't deserve that much criticism. But yeah, it's a difficult formation, difficult system to play in. And I think Arteta has still not got his best 11, has he? We know that from the teams he's picked over the past few months. He has rarely had a settled back four, sometimes because of injuries, but most of the time because, you know, he's been changing players. You know, you look at someone like Cedric, he can't even get a game now. It's a really strange one. I wanted to mention this because I was looking at his stats earlier. Cedric's made 29 appearances in all competitions for Arsenal. Maybe it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, I haven't made any inquiries into it, but perhaps there's a clause in his contract. If he makes 30 appearances, maybe Arsenal have to pay a certain amount of money. Who knows? But it's a strange one, isn't it, with Cedric, because he was doing okay. I know you're not a big fan of him. I saw your tweet the other day about Cedric, but I feel like he's a player. He's a good utility player, similar to Callum Chambers. He can do a job. And yeah, like, I feel like that is the problem with Arteta's system at the moment. He just doesn't know his best team.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. I think the Cedric thing is interesting in that it represents a kind of... it's emblematic of some of the decisions we've made from a recruitment basis, you know, I don't think he's a bad player per se. I just don't think it was a good deal for Arsenal. You know, and now we're at a point where he's not playing left back or right back. And we were told that part of what made him a good signing was his versatility. And Mikel Arteta preferred Granit Xhaka at left back, which I think says a lot. You know, and he's not playing at right back either. Maybe there is a clause, and maybe we're looking to move him on before we have to pay a bonus or a signing on fee or something like that. And if that's the case, it speaks to the deal itself. And look, if we can move in a different direction this summer, all well and good. And I think there was maybe something telling, maybe it's accidental, I don't know, but there was no Willian on the pitch last night. There was no Lacazette on the pitch last night. There was no Cedric on the pitch. There was no Ceballos on the pitch. No Bellerin in the squad. I know he was injured. So maybe those things are, you know, accidental in some way, but maybe there's something telling about what's going on or what's going to be going on next season in terms of who's going to be around and who the manager feels he can count on. I don't think it's a case he doesn't think he can count on Lacazette because he's played him plenty this season. He is our leading scorer. But maybe there's a need to, even in these last couple of games, to sort of focus on what's going to be around next season.
Yeah, definitely. I think we know that Mikel Arteta's been kind of planning his squad overhaul over the past few months. I know that word's been used a lot, but clearly there are a lot of players who he doesn't feel good enough for Arsenal, perhaps. Maybe that's a bit too harsh, but certainly there are players he feels that Arsenal should be moving on. There are players as well that Arsenal could get decent fees for this summer, depending on how the market is. I think you look at the players out on loan, the likes of Ainsley Maitland-Niles. He's never really had a consistent run of games under Mikel Arteta. It's clear that there's a difference of opinion on where Maitland-Niles' best position is. So that kind of makes him a dispensable player, doesn't it? Joe Willock is another really interesting one. It's crazy that he's scoring so many goals at Newcastle. It's almost like Arsenal should have maybe brought him back. But he's the kind of player who would fetch a good fee this summer. But again, it depends on the market, doesn't it? And if you look at the prices or the fees that were going about last summer, there weren't particularly any big deals which kind of caught my eye, at least. And I don't think we're going to be seeing that much money spent over the next few months, purely for the fact that, you know, the market hasn't been like that for a while.
Summer is definitely going to be interesting, and perhaps what we can do will be informed a little bit by whether we're in this UEFA Conference or Europa Conference League thing. I can't quite hide my disdain for this tournament and the pointlessness of it and how little I would be invested in it, because I don't see much in the way of financial incentive. I think there is potentially an argument you could make that this would be useful from a youth development point of view, but I don't think we're in a position where we could play 11 youth players and 7 or 8 youth subs. I think it would have some sort of impact on the first team. There's a two-legged qualifier in August that you'd have to go through to get through to this thing proper. The idea that we wouldn't even qualify for the group stages proper without a qualifying round the week after the Premier League starts, I just don't really see this as being in any way beneficial for Arsenal. I mean, there might be some arguments that it could bring in some money and, whatever. But for me, I just can't. It might be... in some ways the kind of thing that we deserve based on the season that we've had. Because if we do finish on 61 points and you look at the table and you look at what West Ham might finish on to finish in sixth or whoever finishes in sixth, and you think about some of the ridiculous points that Arsenal have dropped this season in games against opposition that they should not be dropping points in some ways it might serve us right to end up in there. And that's a mess of our own making. We can't ignore that. We can't avoid that. But where would you stand on our participation in this thing?
Yeah, I pretty much echo what you just said. I mean, even the theme song is...
Someone said it
sounds like it's been made on GarageBand. And I feel that was maybe a bit harsh to the composer. But, it kind of says it all, doesn't it? That it's like a third-rate competition. Even the Europa League, you have those kind of feelings about the Europa League when Arsenal first qualified for it. It's second-rate. It's not the Champions League, is it?
And yeah.
Arsenal... people always say Arsenal belong in the Champions League. I could hear Freddie Lundberg was saying that on BT Sport last night. And yeah, I think Arsenal are a huge, massive club with loads of history. But you only belong in a competition if you qualify for it and if you're good enough for it. And Arsenal, over 36 or 37 games so far, have not been good enough to qualify for the Champions League. And I just think it's better for Arsenal to focus on the domestic competitions next season, perhaps even the League Cup. They can play the youngsters in the League Cup like Arsene Wenger used to do. I just don't feel like the Conference League is going to benefit Arsenal, even financially. Mm. I think that the amounts are going to be kind of minuscule. They could make more money this summer from selling players than probably qualifying for the Conference League. So
from one player,
I think
maybe.
The best option for us.
I mean, yeah, you could make more from selling one fringe player than you would from playing in that tournament from August to May.
Exactly, yeah. So it doesn't make any sense, really, for Arsenal to try and qualify for it. But obviously, they are going to try and win that last game against Brighton. We'll see where they end up. But yeah, I don't think it's going to benefit Arsenal in too many ways if they do qualify for it. And it will be interesting. I know a lot of the fans are kind of, the away fans are excited about, visiting potentially new places. I guess that is one of the positives. But in terms of positives for the club and the players, I don't really see that many.
Mm. Yeah, well, look, there are some far-flung places that we might end up in that we've never visited before, or perhaps we'll never visit again. So for the travelling support, maybe there is something to that. But just in general, I worry about it taking the focus away, because if we can concentrate on the domestic side of things without the distraction of midweek, because, you can say rest all the senior players, the manager, staff, they all still have to go and prepare for these games and deal with the travel and everything else. So look, we'll see what happens. There's a lot that's going to happen this summer, and I don't want to get too far into that discussion a lot of players. You mentioned players who are out on loan. We have issues to sort out with many of those. Maitland-Niles, Willock, Guendouzi, Torreira. One of them who I know that you keep a close eye on is Dinos Mavropanos, who has had a pretty decent season at Stuttgart. Stuttgart, who were promoted from the second division in Germany, have finished, well, they're not finished yet, but they'll finish maybe ninth in the Bundesliga on their first term back. The season started in a little bit of difficulty for him because he had some injuries. He had a meniscus injury, a knee injury, and then he had a groin strain as well. But he established himself pretty quickly in the team. So what are your expectations as to what might happen with Mavropanos at the end of this season? I know he's talked about, if Arsenal don't want me, he's happy to go back to Stuttgart. Sven Mislintat, who's at Stuttgart, has said, if Arsenal don't want him back, we'll take him again, whether it's permanently or on loan again. So what's your reading of this season that he's had and what might happen this summer?
Well, yeah, firstly, I think Dinos is, people know because I tweet about him all the time. He's a really talented young defender, 23 years old. It seems a long time ago that he kind of made his Arsenal debut. And I remember when he played against Romelu Lukaku at Old Trafford and completely had him in his pocket. And it's been a long time since those games. And he's now settled in Germany. He's had a really good season. You mentioned his meniscus. I mean, he was out for a month. That was a kind of a quick operation, and he was back to full fitness. And ever since then, he's been playing consistently. Great performances against the likes of Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich. He's done really well, and I feel like he's a player that Arsenal should be looking to keep this summer. I would personally bring him back. He's a bit older than William Saliba. And he's obviously got that Bundesliga experience as well. But from what I understand, Arsenal or Mikel Arteta and Edu are keen on selling him this summer permanently. I've spoken to a lot of agents as well around the club, and they all kind of say the same thing, that Arsenal are having a fire sale. They're looking to get rid of everyone. Obviously, not literally everyone, but a lot of players this summer.
Sure.
I think Mavropanos is happy. He's happy in Germany as well. He's got his golden Labrador. He lives with his girlfriend in Stuttgart. He's enjoying life there. But he would definitely be open to returning to Arsenal. I think it's unfortunate as well that he hasn't really had a look in, has he? Mikel Arteta hasn't. I don't think he's ever spoken about him over the past year and a half. So it's disappointing for me because from a personal perspective, I'd like him to succeed at Arsenal. But yeah, it looks like they're going to try and move him on. I think the feeling from maybe his camp as well is that a loan extension might be better. So if he signed for another year on loan, they could potentially get more money if they decided to sell him next summer. But clearly there's a kind of desperation for funds right now at Arsenal, and they need money. So that's, I think, the main reason why they see him as a kind of dispensable player in the squad.
Well, I guess, you know, we could probably sell him for the money we might make in the Europa Conference League. Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of those situations where if you're going to sell him, I suppose, given the length of contract that he has, he's got a contract with Arsenal until 2023, so it's 2 years this summer. If you're not going to keep him, if you've decided that you're going to sell him, it's better to sell him when he's got 2 years left on his contract rather than one. But again, it depends on what sort of money that Stuttgart might be able to come up with. And I suppose part of this is informed by the fact that, you know, if we don't have this Conference League thing next season, and if we're playing 38 Premier League games and some FA Cup games and some League Cup games, you can operate with a much tighter squad. I mean, you need to operate with a much tighter squad. There's no point having a big bloated squad for, you know, a raft of fixtures that you're not going to be playing. You know, financial considerations are going to come into that as well. So, you know, if you think about next season, if Saliba comes back, you've got Saliba and Holding, you've got Gabriel and Pablo Marie, and maybe you've got Callum Chambers as some kind of fifth choice backup if there are some injury problems. So if that is what's being talked about, and I'm sure they're assessing him as well as they're assessing all the other lone players, this summer seems like the right time to sell.
Yeah, and his contract expires in the summer of 2023. So if he did spend another season on loan, maybe clubs could kind of negotiate the price down because he only has a kind of a year left. So it's a difficult one, isn't it? I feel like the players you just mentioned, the defenders you just mentioned, are having watched pretty much every game of Mavropanos's this season, I wouldn't say that any of them are particularly better than him. But of course, the judgment comes down to Mikel Arteta and Edu, and they will feel that the certain profile of player suits Arsenal. I think Chambers, that one of the main reasons that he is in the team is that he's a homegrown player as well, and that's probably one of the reasons he's likely to stay, because he's homegrown. And I think that's just unfortunate, isn't it, that you're going to be in the team, or part of the reason you're going to be in the team is because of where you're from, not just how good you are. And that's not a slight on Chambers. He's a good player. He's a good backup player. But I do feel that someone like Mavropanos could come in and easily start for Arsenal on a consistent basis.
Well, let's see what happens. There's going to be a lot going on this summer and a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. The fire sale, as you mentioned, I'm sure will be an interesting one for all us to look at from the outside as things happen or don't happen throughout the season. And look, hopefully we'll catch up with you at some point during the summer, Chris, and see what's going on with all that. But for now, thank you very much.
Cheers, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much indeed to Chris. You can find him on Twitter. He is @ChrisWheatley_, and he writes about Arsenal for football.london.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Now, Arsenal have had a number of players out on loan this season. First team players, not just academy guys going out to get some development time, but players who were part of the first team squad and for various reasons have gone elsewhere. Some of the moves have been okay, some not so okay, but the star of the show, if you want to call it that, has been Joe Willock, who since his move to Newcastle in January has really caught the eye. He scored on his debut against Southampton on the 6th of February, and in recent weeks has been scoring goal after goal after goal. As we said earlier, he's the youngest player to ever score 6 games in a row in the Premier League. He scored goals against Spurs, West Ham, Liverpool, Leicester, Man City, and Sheffield United. It means that he is in double figures for goals this season between what he scored for Newcastle and what he did for Arsenal in the Europa League. He scored 3 times for us in the group stages of the Europa League. I thought it might be interesting to get a little bit of Newcastle perspective on Joe and how he's done there and what might happen next with him. So joining me from the Newcastle United fanzine and podcast True Faith and from the board of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, it's Alex Hurst. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. I suppose first things first is, has Joe Willock exceeded the expectations you might have had for him before he arrived on loan?
Yeah, very much so. I think a lot of Newcastle fans didn't know a lot about Joe Willock, even though he played a lot of games for Arsenal, as it turned out. You know, I think the January transfer window was hugely underwhelming, considering the team were struggling as badly as they were. But he has been transformative, not just in a few games, but really for Newcastle's season. And although Newcastle probably would have stayed up because of the inability of the bottom three to win games, he has almost single-handedly dragged us into mid-table away from the relegation zone.
What sort of a role has he been playing? Because I know in some of the games he's come off the bench to score late, and like his ability to pop up in the box is something that we've seen as Arsenal fans. But you know, how has he been used by Steve Bruce, and how has he managed to look? You don't score six times in a row in the Premier League by accident. It's not the kind of run he's going to do time and time again, but. What has Steve Bruce been doing with him to get him into these positions and to make him so effective?
Yeah, well, you know, when Willock turned up, Newcastle were playing a diamond in midfield, and he was playing on the left or the right of the diamond. And even though he was very impressive on his debut in a slightly mad game against Southampton, he wasn't as effective playing in a kind of wide role. The team got worse and worse, so Bruce went back to the kind of safety blanket five at the back, which is awful to watch as a fan, but has been way more effective in terms of points. And Willock plays in central midfield. He plays in as one of three central midfielders alongside Jonjo Shelvey, who can't run, and Miguel Almiron, who can run lots, but isn't a central midfielder. So Willock is basically the heart of the side. You know, Steve Bruce talked about and being the kind of player he wanted to build a side round. And it was strange to hear, considering he wasn't putting him in the team to start, even though most Newcastle fans at the time thought this kid's got to be playing, particularly compared to some of the other lads who were getting in front of him at the time. You know, the likes of Jeff Hendrick, who's one of the worst players I've ever seen at this level. And then all of a sudden, you know, because he scores those goals late on in games, it becomes impossible not to have him in the team. And then, yeah, he's been really, really good in that kind of, you know, playing in the middle of the park, box to box. He can run forever. He can defend. He puts a shift in at the back. He's kind of just all over the pitch, really. He's one of those players who just pops up in every single position. And I think that to answer your original question, when he's been given a central free role and, you know, the ability to get up and down the pitch and across the pitch, he's been way more effective than, say, playing on the right side of a diamond where he has to support a fullback. So that kind of freer role for him in the middle of the pitch and the heart of the side brought the best out of him.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the defensive side of his game, because I think that is something that some Arsenal fans certainly had a few concerns about. I remember watching him in a preseason game in the States, not last summer, the summer before, and being really impressed with his defensive awareness. I'm not sure it's always translated, so is that, or has that been, was clearly not as much of a strength as what he's done going forward, but is that something that has maybe been offset a little bit by the fact that it's a back five? He doesn't have quite as much defensive responsibility, or is it a case that he's doing the job at both ends in midfield?
I think there is something in terms of the back five. You know, he's got three centre-backs behind him, so any mistakes potentially aren't capitalised as much by the opposition. However, you know, particularly under Steve Bruce, he has to spend most of the game defending. Newcastle play without the ball, willingly play without the ball for, you know, up to 70, 80% of the game. So if you're no good at doing the defensive side, you wouldn't survive in this system. So it's been really impressive. And I suppose, you know, we've had players on loan before at Newcastle from other Premier League clubs. It's not something I particularly enjoy as a fan. But the difference between Willock and maybe some of those other players we've had is just his willingness to graft and get on with it. And, you know, I'm sure it's the same at Arsenal, but you can go a long way at Newcastle by being a nice guy and by being, you know, vocal on social media and really immersing yourself in the fan culture. And he's done that. He's always willing to do interviews for the club's official channel. He's always been on social media on the club's official channel, recording videos saying things. So he just seems like a really nice kid, and that's done him a lot of good. And the fact that he seems to have thrown himself into the team's struggle, so the team were really struggling, and he does interviews talking about not wanting to be near the relegation zone, talking up the team, saying that the team is better than where they are. I mean, that might not sound like much, but the manager talks about, you know, how limited the squad is and how when we have injuries, it's so hard to compete. And it's just, it's you know, shouldn't be the job of a 21-year-old loanee to come in and speak on the behalf of the supporters. But he has kind of taken on that mantle a little bit alongside Alan Saint-Maximin. So he's just really, really popular. And the fact that he just seemed to get his roll his sleeves up and get on with the task at hand and dragging the team away from the bottom three, it's not the kind of stuff you'd expect from someone who's still very, very early in their career and is still really a very young adult.
Yeah, it is a weird one, isn't it, with a loan move like this, where you think, you know, for a player like Joe, who had been much more involved last season at Arsenal, I think he made 42 appearances in one season, not all of them starts, but he started plenty, and then he sort of fell by the wayside a bit. And you know, like you say, when it comes to loan deals, you've got a guy going to Newcastle. We've had players come to Arsenal on loan the last couple of years, and you think with your most optimistic hat on, well, you know, they're going to come, they're going to love it, and they're going to want to stay. The other side of it, of course, is that they might be trying to, you know, I'm not disputing anyone's professionalism, but maybe their ambition is to go back to their parent club, as, you know, we've got a couple of players, and their goal is to make their mark there. And this is a way of showing their manager that, look, this is what I can do. If you give me regular playing time at Premier League level, this is the kind of impact I can make.
Yeah, and that is always the issue, isn't it? And that's the kind of flaws. You always want to be a club, and you've just reminded me that Arsenal have had the loan players as well, but you want to be the kind of club that doesn't need other clubs' players.
Yeah.
But such is modern football. You know, I think in terms of his future, I mean, his, you know, the reaction he got last night, I was at the game last night, 10,000 fans there, you know, he was serenaded pretty much all game, obviously scored again, played really well again, in another really poor performance by the team overall. One of the things about him which might be different to Arsenal, because he mentioned that he played a lot last season, is that, you know, he's playing with other good footballers. Arsenal, I know Arsenal haven't been great, particularly in the league over the past few years, but he's probably coming to Newcastle and all of a sudden he's quite a big fish in a small pond, particularly in terms of the central midfielders we have.
Yeah.
And maybe that's brought the best out of him. Maybe that's matured him a little bit. That kind of ability that he's got, where all of a sudden he's not kind of having to compete for his place with players who are, you know, on bigger wages or more influential in the dressing room or whatever. You know, now he is the big dog almost in the team. That seems to have brought the best out of him. And you get that with some players who thrive in situations where they are needed. But you know, in terms of their future and all that kind of thing, I don't think any Newcastle fans would blame Joe Willock if he didn't sign for Newcastle. I think the club are going to try, Newcastle are going to try and sign him, would probably pay maybe up to £30 million if they can find the money. And I've no idea whether Arsenal would take that or not. But, you know, I think a lot of Newcastle fans think, well, by coming to Newcastle, what are you actually doing with your career? What do you want to play under Steve Bruce and play with 30% of the ball every week and finish 15th and have everyone say how good a job the manager's done because you're 15th on 40 points? And Alan Saint-Maximin actually yesterday before the game went on Talk Sport and said Newcastle need to sign Joe Willock, which is, you know, a very, very bold thing to say, particularly about a teammate and a colleague. But that just shows, you know, Alan Saint-Maximin is Newcastle's best player by a mile. He's just been signed with a new 6-year contract, the club's highest paid player. So that in itself, when you've got the club's best player by some distance going on national radio saying, my club need to sign this kid, that would show the right ambition. That tells you how valued he is, not just from the supporters, but also by his teammates as well.
Yeah, I reckon that if Newcastle came up with $30 million for Joe Willock, Arsenal would be ready sellers considering, you know, everything that's going on at the club in terms of finances and what else needs to be done with a rebuild. And you have a player who was probably worth some money because he's a young English player, you know, who can do a job at this level. But then, you know, I think when you go on the kind of scoring run that he goes on, it's a little bit, I won't say bittersweet for you, but the more he scores, the better it is for you as a team, but also the more expensive he becomes as a player if you do want to sign him.
Yeah, and it's not just about Newcastle and Arsenal, is it? Because, other Premier League clubs, you'd imagine, would therefore start taking an interest. If you're Brendan Rodgers at Leicester City and you're looking for a central midfielder and you've got that kind of money to spend, if the player's going to choose between Champions League or Europa League, Leicester City and Newcastle, I know who I'd choose as a young player. So it does feel a little bit like that. The more we go and the better we get, or the better he gets, the more alerts other teams. But in Newcastle, everyone's always prepared for disappointment, particularly in the transfer market. The financial situation at the club, even though the club are one of the few who release their annual accounts at the latest possible opportunity every single year. But we imagine that Newcastle won't be immune to the effects that nearly every other Premier League club, maybe apart from Manchester City and Chelsea, have felt from the pandemic. So whether they've got the money, whether the player would want to come, I don't know. But you are right that we've got one game left on Sunday against Fulham. What an opportunity for him to get the 7 in a row. He's already the youngest ever player in the Premier League to score in 6 games in a row. So I'm sure that's a huge motivation for him. And even if he's not at Newcastle next season, it would be a great way for him to sign off.
Yeah, look, I have to say that one of the things that's always caught my eye about Joe is his ability to be in the right place at the right time and in the penalty area. He really does have this uncanny ability to know where the ball is dropping or to just attack certain situations. So, yeah, it would be great for him to finish and make it 7 in a row. And we'll see, obviously, what happens in the summer. There's clearly, like you say, more than just Arsenal and Newcastle involved. Personally, I like him. I think we've got some problems at Arsenal in terms of midfielders who score goals, in that we don't really have any. So that would be some way of filling a gap that we might need to look at in the transfer market. But let's see. If Newcastle came with the right offer, I think Arsenal would probably sell, given the financial situation. Just finally, you talked about finances and ownership and all that kind of stuff, and obviously I think there are some not quite exact parallels, but certainly in terms of how fans are feeling about their owners at both Newcastle and Arsenal. How has this season been for you guys with that ongoing situation with Mike Ashley after what happened with the takeover falling apart, et cetera, et cetera? Has it been difficult to keep people their chins up, if you like?
Oh, definitely. It's been horrific. You've got obviously the pandemic and the fact that no one's been allowed to go to the game. But like you say, there's a large section of the fan base which believes that the Premier League is corrupt and Liverpool and Tottenham stopped our takeover. There's now a league. Mike Ashley is got two very high profile legal cases going on against the Premier League. It's never a good situation where your club is at war with the league. Newcastle are hopeless. Newcastle played Arsenal 3 times a season, didn't score. They're just a dreadful team. It's almost a miracle. It's a miracle that they've stayed up. Probably down to Joe Willock and a couple of other players, but the manager is absolutely loathed. It's just been a dreadful season. I think if there'd been fans in grounds, the manager would have gone months ago, because it would have been unsustainable watching those kind of performances. But, if we beat Fulham on Sunday, then it's back to, I think we'll get to 45 points, which in the Mike Ashley era, the club's only finished on more than that on 3 occasions, which is pretty brutal. That'll be 14 seasons. So, yeah, it's been a dreadful season. I think a lot of fans have just thought, well, whatever happens this season, we're going to get taken over. But it's going to be another summer of all of that insecurity. Like, it's the same for you guys at the minute. It's just awful not knowing who your manager's going to be, not knowing who's going to run the club. It's impossible. One thing I'll say for Steve Bruce is, I can't stand him as a manager or a man, is that it has been difficult for him doing his job, in full knowledge that if his boss had his way, he would sell the club tomorrow and Steve Bruce would be out of a job. So it's difficult for him, but I don't think that's impacted on his managerial ability, because there isn't much ability to speak of at this level. But it's been a dreadful season overall, mate.
Well, look, here's to things looking up, maybe not between now and the end of this season, but for next season. Keep up the good work with the Supporters Trust, because I know those things are important, and we have them going on at Arsenal as well. And hopefully Joe can do it for you 7 in a row on Sunday. Thanks, Alex.
Cheers, Andrew.
Thank you to Alex. You can find him on Twitter. He is at TFAlex1892. If you're interested in the podcast and the fanzine, that's at true-faith.co.uk. And the Newcastle United Supporters Trust is nufctrust.co.uk. I think it'd be great if Joe Willock made it 7 in a row against Fulham on Sunday. What a way to end a brilliant loan spell at Newcastle United that would be for him. Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a chance with us next season. We've got some issues with midfield. Torreira's going to go. Guendouzi's going to go. Ceballos is going to go. We don't know if we're going to get Martin Odegaard back. I think as a squad option in a season where we're not playing quite as many games in Europe, etc., etc., he could do a job for us. But if the money comes in from Newcastle, perhaps, it must be tempting, or it will be tempting for the club. I also think, like, if a club like Leicester are going to come in and offer you money for Joe Willock, you say, well, they're really smart and they buy well. Why don't we just kind of hang on to the player that we have, who's ours, who's grown up at the club and could develop into a player for us? If it doesn't work out, you can still sell him next summer. I think we've got other players we can move on this summer as well in the market. But look, as with everything that's going to happen this summer, I don't rule anything out, really, in terms of who might go. It all depends on what money is on offer. So look, we are going to be playing Brighton on Sunday for all that that entails. Whatever it means, James and I will discuss on the Arsecast Extra on Monday. We won't be recording it on Monday morning, though. It will be a little later in the day, I think probably late afternoon. So it might be Monday evening by the time we get that podcast out for you. In the meantime, we will have a Newcastle preview podcast for Patreon members. You can sign up if you like, patreon.com/arseblog. For now, though, just a thanks, a sincere thanks to all of you for being here throughout this season. We've done it again. We've gone through an entire campaign. I know it has been a difficult one on the pitch and off the pitch, and I don't just mean for Arsenal. I mean for all of us. It's been a really weird, strange, surreal, unpleasant at times last 12 months or so. So to all of you out there who tune in every week, every episode, if it provided some distraction, some entertainment during this last year, regardless of what's happened with Arsenal this season, thank you very much. It means a great deal to me and to everybody here. I'm glad we can keep doing it. I'm glad to be doing it because it's helped keep me sane, I guess, in some ways, knowing that you guys are here and listening and waiting for the next episode. So, look, football, there's not much we can do about that. We can't control what happens. We can only react to it. But we can do our best for each other and continue to do our best for each other as much as possible. We can, as soon as we're able, consign this season to the depths of history, to the annals. That's with two N's, by the way, of history from an Arsenal perspective. And, you know, in August, it'll all come around again and we can hopefully be optimistic about what lies ahead. So for now, have yourselves a great weekend. Here's to a successful weekend, that things work out for us exactly the way we want, whatever that might be. So until next time, a very sincere thanks. Take it easy, folks. Catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Democratic Republic of Carl, where today we are holding the draw for the Europa Conference League. That's right, the 13th most popular football tournament in all of Europe. And we here have great pleasure in hosting this event at the expense of some of our neighbors. Take that, United Socialist States of Steve. The Europa Conference League puts together some of the most exciting, top-class, high-class teams anyone can ever see anywhere, including AIK Galway, FC Slopes of Andorra, Borussia Trev's Auto Shop, come and have a go if you're hard enough rovers, Hertha Bertha, and Arsenal. But before the draw, the most important part of any European football competition, the anthem. We are proud to announce that the anthem of the Europa Conference League has been done by world-famous DJ and remixer Moby. Please, in this democratic republic of Carl, take it away to wow the people, Moby.
It's a feast of football, we're all having fun in the UEFA Conference League.
Ladies and gentlemen, I must apologize. I am told he's not Moby, but Toby, who is of course idiot son of President Carl. Oh no, I said it out loud. Well, that is the end for me. Time to seek asylum elsewhere. United Soviet States of Steve, I'm coming!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.